Morning!
Morning!
Welcome to the India Explained podcast, recorded in London and San Francisco. One take, unscripted, no rehearsal.
Hey, Bunty, greetings. Greetings to our listeners and viewers, if we do this on video. So, Bunty, it's been a while, but since we did the end of your podcast, we thought we'd now start by, you know, covering a range of topics. And today, the idea that you and I were talking about was just entertainment in India for young people when we were growing up. You know, I was discussing this with my mom as well, and I was saying that, look, you know, the only options for entertainment were meet relatives or, you know, hang around with some, like, extended family friend circle. But in the course of everyday life, one of the things that we would experience was animals doing performances by the wayside, right? Like snake charmer, or, you know, occasionally like mahout comes through your neighborhood, right? And so on.
I think this is a rich vein of conversation because, you know, in the 80s, India of the 80s, there were a hierarchy of street performers. Right? So the lowest was the monkey. So essentially it would be a very kind of scraggy looking person with two monkeys. And the monkeys were having a rough time, and it was a completely explicit case of animal abuse, if ever there was one, right? Because the guy could barely take care of himself. So the fact that he was responsible for two additional creatures was just, you know. And then the tricks that they would do is he would kind of pretend one of the monkeys was like a filmy heroine and the other one was a hero. And he would kind of try and mock like some scene from like Shole or some other kid, like, you know, you would do this like Kapoori verse and get the monkeys to enact who in fear would kind of act out, right? So that was kind of the entry level, right? Is that your recollection?
So yes, I want to, like, this is, you know, I mean, the consistency. So the one very interesting sociological point here is that the consistency of these narratives in different places is astounding, because my memory, I still have this very vivid memory. I was in college, hanging out with a bunch of friends, and we were near the Gateway of India. And the Gateway of India is a major tourist spot, right?
Yeah.
So, across the Taj. So, we saw this going on, and there was this guy, but in his case, he had two monkeys, and he also had a dog. The dog was one of Tommy Sheru, stray dog.
Yeah.
So, first, the dog was doing some kind of acrobatic tick, where he was starting with, there were these different tin cans of smaller size, so Dalda at the base, then a slightly smaller one, then a slightly smaller one, you know, pyramid. And finally, the dog on all fours was perched on, you know, Cadbury's drinking chocolate, that thing.
Right.
Poor cheapster, he was given like these sasta dark glasses. Then there was this monkey duo. And the thing is, he had dressed the male monkey up in a vest and a tie.
Right.
But, you know, the poor chap didn't have any pants. And the female monkey was dressed in a frock.
Right.
And then it was this, you know, and then there was a crowd gathered around. And, you know, mostly it's like a crowd that comes from, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah. All apologies. So they're very fascinated. And, you know, they're taken in the architecture and stuff. But then he was doing this very sort of, you know, low level Hindi film humor. He was asking the monkey, the male monkey, ki, tune sasu ko kya dikhaya, apne sas ko, your father-in-law. Yeah. Then the monkey showed his butt, and this guy would produce a sound effect doing, sorry.
I think one of the things you can't take away is the idiom of showmanship, right? At entry level. Right.
Yeah.
So this guy had geared up a dog, he got a monkey, he got a narrative in place.
Yeah.
And sometimes the narrative, I think, would sometimes take shots at politicians, you know. So
exactly.
There'd be lots of interesting. So that was the kind of the entry level, like the monkey and the double act. The double act monkey, right?
Yeah. But, you know, this telling the father-in-law to like take
okay. The one thing that, when you kind of go up the hierarchy of strength, then comes the sapera. Okay? Now, so the sapera, the thing was, we've done episodes on Nage dance earlier on. there is a strange, and I have to caveat this. I freak out by snakes. You know, there are some people who adore snakes. I'm not one of those. I'm genuinely scared of reptilian, you know, my reptile brain doesn't adjust with snakes. So I was scared of snake charmers. And I remember that the snake charmers would come and their stock in trade was, they had like four or five like kind of very lazy, sluggish snakes, which were, they looked like pythons. And these guys would like, not pythons, like, they looked like glorified earthworms. They were not like big enough. They're like this small. Right,
and everybody, snakes or something, yeah.
Yeah. And everybody would have one cobra.
Right.
So, and what he'd do is the cobra for hours would be doing this, you know, swaying from side to side. And I remember one of the kind of the, if I watched that show with equal measure of trepidation and fascination. I was fascinated that there was something that was going on and there were these dangerous things in the baskets. But I also thought that, you know, if it escaped, right? And I know there's a racket in Delhi. One of our friends in Delhi, who I don't want to name now, he was driving past in Delhi and he parked up and all of these kind of Baba-like figures with a snake came and asked for alms. And when he didn't oblige, he kind of tossed the snake into the car. So this is a racket that these guys use, you know, in terms of Babas using snakes to extricate money. So that's kind of the next era. Do you have memories of, you know, snake charmers visiting your...
Yeah. I mean, and you know, the thing is the snake in the Indian imagination exudes a powerful hold across like social groups. Like, I have relatives who believe all this stuff, and you know, nothing inherently about my relatives like makes them great or enlightened or superior, but these are people who you've had the benefits of an education, right?
Yeah.
And some of them are teachers or have been teachers and stuff, but you're believing this Ichhadari Nagin stuff and all, and this whole narrative of, you know, curses and spirits and people, trees and all. So yeah, and you know, in the West, there's the stereotype of India as a land of snakes. But, you know, I think you had told me the story once that you had, it was some, you know, Nag Panchami and you had some colleague visiting from some other country and you spent the morning telling her that this is a stereotype, and then at every, like, you know, traffic light, there was someone with a snake, right? So yeah, the snake has kind of been this sort of ubiquitous figure.
And I think a lot of Hindi films use snakes to kind of signify kind of hurt women, right? This is a, so like you offend a woman and the way that she get backs to you as a snake, right? And there are like lots of credible religious narratives. And I'm sure there are doctoral dissertations abound on, you know, snakes and the feminine avatar of snakes. So I had one of my cousins who was like really scared of snakes, and she would freak out even with that, you know, the music that the snake charmers would play. But it would just give her the heebie-jeebies and she would react very badly.
I want to just put two more thoughts in there, like moving to another animal, that there was also a bhaluwala. And, you know, and I get it, like many of those guys have been out, you know, that practice has been outlawed. I mean, we both, you know, love animals and love wildlife, and you know, there's been some wildlife-oriented kind of thing we've done on every trip. And we have these plans to see, you know, wolves and bears in the US and so on. But, you know, the thing is, many of those initiatives were driven by these relative, you know, these elite organizations or Indian, you know, people from elite backgrounds inspired by PETA. And the bhaluwala, that was his traditional occupation.
Yeah.
So there's that question also in the mix. And that, you know, raises some interesting kind of questions for me. The second point is that, you know, many Indian communities, I would say, have had fairly complex relationships with animals which have included veneration, like the Bishnois, right? And they consider animals sacred. And this untrammeled development and senseless kind of development and deforestation in India has really taken a heavy toll. It's altered those relationships and it's been to the detriment of, you know, animals. And you get it. Like, for instance, you know, villagers who will kill tigers and so on. I mean, there are some cases of absolute brutality. Like, it's a very tragic incident of someone you know, hurting an elephant, killing an elephant. And then I was just reading about it. Some three guys beat a dolphin to death. So those are, you know, clearly crimes, as are, you know, like killings of tigers and so on. But, you know, when you destroy their habitat and then they do start attacking humans and so on, it would actually be a shame, you know, if something serious was not done about it, because these are just magnificent beasts.
I think just turning our attention back to the bear show. So that I think that's you very timely. That is the next level up. So you've got monkey, snake, bear, right? And I think on the bear, generally there would be one bear.
Always.
It would never be a double act. So, and there was a limited set of things that this bear could do because it was connected to the rope and it would go around the person. Now, my overwhelming memory of the bear tamer who was doing tricks was he was trying to convince adults that the bear was partial to alcohol, right? Now, so people were asking him, what does he like to do? So having grown up on, you know, Winnie the Pooh and those kind of narrative, you think, honey, he was saying, Saab, honey, yes, but whiskey more. Like, and this is 8 or 9 years old. I was just thinking that, you know, what he's trying to do is ensure that his supply of booze, right? So kind of fundraise, crowdfund his booze habit via the bear. And it may be true that bears are partial to a bit of an you know, alcoholic drink. You know, I don't know where the monkeys are, but I know for a fact that bears. There have been issues of, you know, North America where bears have got drunk, right?
Yeah, they're very smart creatures. They figure out, you know, stuff in, they rummage through people's garbage and trash. And, you know, a bear might like pick up a bottle of beer and develop a taste for those last two.
Which I found really hilarious. And I thought that, you know, but I think the king of the road performers was the elephant. I think that, so if you imagine yourself growing up in kind of an ill-planned urban city, which is what most urban cityscapes in 70s, 80s India were, you know, we're not talking about the metropolitan Chandigarh being an exception. You know, most urban conurbation in India is haphazard, ill-planned, you know, not thought through. So essentially what you're left with is very narrow streets, right? And often very fiddly, not able to take, you know. So one of the things that makes me nervous about driving in India, which I've never attempted, is how do I pass traffic? Because, you know, there are roads that kind of the normal roads don't allow enough room for two cars to pass each other. Anyway, in the middle of that kind of constricted urban landscape, you have this gentle ambling giant, right, walking through. And generally, there would be a guy who would be kind of mahouting the elephant. And alongside the elephant, there were two accompanists who would, you know, either be singing bhajans or doing something, you know, making a big deal. There were no tricks, right? It was just that you saw the elephant, right?
Sometimes you could feed the elephant. No, one thing that the elephant would do is it would bless you.
So it would use its strength to bless.
50 paisa you give it or a 1 rupee coin and the elephant would bless you.
Yes. So there was that was string. The other thing that these guys couldn't control was the elephant having a shit, right? So now what would happen is so what I'm trying to draw you into is this image of a small street, right? Which at best has been used to dog shit, right? Which is in the scheme of things, think of it as a fistful of poo, right? The elephant poo is like big, right? It's scale. And I remember when in Calcutta once, the elephant passed by and took a shit in the streets we were in. For a few days, there was kerfuffle in the community as to what do we do with this? Because it is an amount of shit that nobody has ever dealt with, right? And the guy who was supposed to clean up the streets flat refused to do it. Say that this is fucking beyond my call of duty, right? And I just thought, you know, this kind of urban things that happen when an elephant passes through your homescape. Were you exposed to elephants?
Yeah. I mean, I have some very lovely memories of elephants, actually. There was, you know, with my uncle once, I was in Delhi. We had gone somewhere and this was in, you know, some fancy neighborhood. My uncle was like, you know, he was affiliated with the Indian government at that point of time. So it was one of those, you know, very Tony neighborhoods. And it just happened that this elephant was, and Mahout were going by. And, you know, my uncle had some like important business to attend. So, you know, one of his assistants was sort of supervising it. And I just sat on the elephant for like hours or for about half an hour. And I really, really enjoyed it. And you know, my dad also had a very interesting story that he's an engineer, retired, long since retired. And at some point of time, he had to like work in a fairly remote part of India to oversee something.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a guest house kind of arrangement. So in the evening, he would, you know, after the day's work was done. And the only thing that would happen there is I think a train would go by or not much. So he would just, you know, sit out on the porch, you know, have a drink. And there was an elephant and Mahout who would come by, and the elephant became quite fond of him. So I have these proxy memories. And I something about elephants that I love. Let me just mention one thing that you said, which is very fascinating. This Winnie the Pooh. Now, you know, this when you, in these like English and American storybooks, when you see these animals,
yeah,
you form an image. The reality sometimes is, you know, because in
I thought so.
Because India was Amar Chitra Katha, and it was beautiful. And I love Amar Chitra Katha, despite the critique of Amar Chitra Katha as being, you know, Hindutva or whatever, which I think is overreaching.
Right.
It didn't turn us into fanatics. But the quality, you know, in Western storybooks, animals are very cute, right? They are a pedagogical instrument to teach children. Now, my wife had this experience where, you know, she grew up in South Bombay. So, you know, she was seeing, you know, English piggies, Roald Dahl, Polar Piggy, etc. So she thought that pigs are those, you know, like cute pink little creatures with those curly tails. Now, she had then gone at some point. So that was the only exposure to pigs, because in South Bombay, I mean, you know, like where do you see pigs?
Right.
You don't.
Yeah,
so then, you know, so she had gone to meet some relatives in Ulhasnagar, which is, you know, suburb of Bombay. And there she saw these strange animals with filthy, you know, rolling around in the mud, like snorting away. And she asked her mom, what are these? And her mother-in-law said, these are pigs. So it was just shock of her life. Because basically in your mind, this is a little cute little piggy going Hong Kong, oink, 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 sorry. And now you're like Ulhasnagar ka dhukkar.
No, I think you're right. I think just you know, we've talked about animals in everyday life that featured in our growing up in India. And I think this could potentially be a segue into two different routes, Rohit. One is a trip to the zoo. And the other is a trip to the circus, right? So let's, what are your earliest memories of a trip to the zoo?
So zoo, okay. Latest memory, a few years ago when I was in Bombay, I took my son to the zoo. Bombay Zoo is one of the saddest places in the world. Right. It's just sad.
Yeah.
In India, I used to go, you know, I've lived all over India, all the four metros. So in Madras, as it was called then, we would go to a place called Gindi Park, which was a reptilian zoo. And one memory I have is that, and you know, this is like at the best of times, India is not very well regulated. So this was a reptile park, and there were these wells which had alligators in them. Yeah. And I think you could actually buy rats, live rats, to feed these alligators or crocodiles, or you could get them. So there was a bunch of guys, and there were these, you know, like the sort of these gangs of young men who, you know, just like create havoc. Yeah. Everywhere, right? Uncouth oafs. So what they were doing is they were messing around with the alligator, which is they would like the rats squealing away at the end of the rope. So they're lowering the rat, and then as the alligator's coming, they're like yanking it out.
Right.
You know, so the three times he did it, the fourth time that alligator leaped up and he almost got that dude's hand. And the dude like just crapped his pants and let the rats fall. So that is one memory. The second memory is in Calcutta.
Yeah.
My grandparents were visiting and we all decided to go to the zoo. Now, it's a very inexplicable kind of decision. And it's an irrational decision I never gotten to the bottom of. Now, maybe my grandparents were or were not there, I don't know. It was the day after Christmas, the day of Christmas.
Right.
And it was Calcutta Zoo. And it turned out that 40,000 people went to the zoo that day. So it was a nightmarish experience. And my other memory at that time is, what happened is, around the monkey enclosure, there was a large gathering, and it was mostly, again, men, and there was like a lot of like cheering and giggling, and I didn't know what was going on. And then I I caught a glimpse, and basically this, like, you know, the whole sort of, this kind of pathos to this. This monkey was like pleasuring himself.
Yes.
This was providing massive entertainment to men, yes, the sort of 18 to 35, 40
category. I think that's interesting. So my, the thing about zoos in India, by and large, most zoos are remnants of a despot's hobby. Right? Hear me out. What this means, and I'm not talking about the metropolitan zoos, right? Calcutta, Bombay, Delhi, there's some kind of zoological backstory, mm-hmm, right? There's some Englishman who had a passion for butterflies. It went out of control. He bought land. He scaled out the zoo. You will find those narratives in the big, big cities. When you go to like tier two, tier three towns, like the Indore Zoo or the Bhopal Zoo, right, or the Agra Zoo, 99% of the time, right, it'll be one lonely despot, right, who had a collection of peacocks, like a lone monkey and a tiger, like what combination, right? And then you look at that zoo and you think, how the fuck did you scale up, right? You know, so this, and the narrative generally goes that in the year 1827, when the Nawab of Chittorgarh fell on hard times, he blessed the community of Bhopal with a zoo. And these are made up, yeah? And the zoo at that point consisted two peacocks, one giraffe, one zebra, you know, like random animals, right? And without any judgment on the zoo as is here and now, my question always is, you know, how did you sustain interest? You know, and how did you scale up? And just a segue to the zoo issue of, you know, how minor towns have zoos, is you will find inevitably on the backstory of any American invasion to a foreign country, there's going to be a zoo documentary, right? By which I mean this. Iraq got invaded. Some lame-ass guy from an American network will make the last lion of Baghdad, right?
It was not about the only pig in Afghanistan.
Correct. So, and I think there is another one. And the reason I say this is this, without trying to go into the details, there's a friend of ours who's a very close relative, brother-in-law, has recently made a movie about an elephant in the Islamabad Zoo that had to be rehabilitated, right? So it got rehoused and Cher got involved, right? So I just think zoos bring, I don't have many fond recollections of zoos. I know the most notable instance in the Calcutta Zoo was a guy on New Year's Day going into the tiger enclosure and having his head bit off. Literally, right? That's what he died. But I have always been fascinated by small town zoos, which is, you know, how they kind of cobble together basically one madman's, you know, it's goldfish, lion, and, you know, zebra. It's just like, how the fuck did you?
It's interesting because in the US, like I've driven through a lot of the US, a fair amount, not a lot, but in the South, or you're driving through the Midwest, often what will happen is there'll be a very tiny town and there'll be like a, you know, attraction will be one llama.
That.
You know, it'll be like, come see the shark. It will technically be a shark, but it'll be about yay big in a aquarium. And, you know, it's a couple of bucks you pay or whatever.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
you know, it's in that realm of like, you know, world's largest ball of string and so on.
And obviously, Tiger King at the top of the year, last year, made such a report. So let's turn our attention in interest of time to circus, right? Circuses have, I don't know, you know, obviously we now have Cirque du Soleil and, you know, lots of very sophisticated circuses which are bereft of animals. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in India, animals had a central role in circuses.
Oh, yeah, very much so. And that was, you know, it was a legit form of entertainment. And it's interesting. It was one of those practices where there was a continuity between the experiences of our parents' generation and our generation. I think by the time we were in our teens, probably the circus was already dying out,
yeah,
in the big cities at least, right?
Yeah.
But I suspect, you know, I've been away from India for a long time, 2 decades, but I suspect that for people of our generation, what their kids do for entertainment now is very different from what people of our generation did, what our kids, yeah, would have done, even if we were in India. And that's probably true of us and our parents too. I get that. But I remember my mom saying that when she was a kid, one of the big attractions was going to see a circus in Delhi.
Right.
And I remember seeing a circus when I was, you know, a few years old, maybe 7, 8 years old in Delhi, and perhaps one in another city. And the circus was the same. There was the big tent. There was a tiger doing tricks or, you know, leaping through a ring of fire. And then I remember that there was this kind of mesh sphere which was suspended up, and there was a guy in a motorcycle constantly going around. But I also remember that, you know, like in the circus in the US, you could get Moofly circus peanuts.
Yeah.
Peanut shells everywhere.
Yeah.
Where the circus would take place would be like Ramlila Maidan, or massive tents would be put up. But the smell of dung was overpowering.
It's very interesting, Rohit. I think one of the other things that I now look back on circuses and think that, you know, there were, it had the kind of whole specter of human society, you know, right from the dwarfs to the elderly kind of ringmaster. Mm. And in the middle was generally the people who performed the trapeze, right, were the fittest of the lot. Like, they were the people who carried the show, because the clowns would be fooling around and all the other expertise, like the people who would be doing like the elephant tricks and the lion, were like elderly men who were animal trainers. So the real kind of skill craft was the trapeze people. And I remember I have great memories of watching Gemini and Apollo, those circuses. Good. And particularly seeing, you know, they do this opening act of the thing. And then what has happened over a period of time, two nations kind of started dominating the circus narrative, China and Russia. So I remember in Calcutta, I think it was in the late 80s, there was this great Russian circus, right, that came through. And I think one of the things in the locality that we were growing up in, obviously I didn't go to see the circuses, was that titillation of scantily clad Russian women doing kind of gymnastics.
These were ex-ballet dancers and all, right?
Correct. And this, the preoccupation of the para elders, like the locality elders, of, you know, the moral line on where this sits with, you know, children. And then we segue into sex education, you know. How do I explain this to my child as fit for consumption?
I want to just interrupt here for a second. In North India, I don't think there are these problems, because in the North Indian wedding at some point of time,
yeah,
in the Indian context, the term cabaret,
yeah,
has a very specific meaning. Like, cabaret is a certain kind of dance, you know, like, I think in the, you know, a certain kind of like entertainment with some connotations of class in the West. In India, cabaret is what is called a striptease.
Right.
So there was a Hotel Rajdoot in Delhi and so on. And I remember a cousin of mine saying that they had gone to some one of those, you know, very loud Punjabi weddings. And the sort of highlight was that there would be a cabaret performance.
Right.
Now, by today's standards, it would be very tame. By much of what you see in Bollywood, it would be very tame.
Right.
You know, and exploitative. I mean, you know, some poor lady, you know, ultimately hanging out in a blouse and petticoat. And, you know, still exploitative. But this was marketed as legitimately classy in the Punjabi mindset. But what happened is that when that event happened, a lot of old people apparently got very angry and kind of like stormed out. But the threshold for morality is somewhat different north of the Vindhyas.
Well, I think it's interesting. Look, I think this has been a good chat, you know, just opening up the innings for 2021. You know, it's our Happy New Year episode. You know, just reminiscing on, you know, how everyday city life would be interspersed with these kind of magical moments for good and bad. And then, you know, we've talked about, you know, circuses and zoos, and maybe we'll talk more about zoo, because I've taken my daughter to a zoo when she was young, and she was fascinated, as I'm sure you to your son. And here's the thing, Rohit, David Attenborough called out for a charitable contribution to the Zoological Society in London. And through the lockdown, because, you know, I love wildlife, I haven't been able to travel like anybody else. But I have taken a membership of the Zoological Society in London. And I have gone to the zoo in Regent's Park, which is a city zoo, and also a zoo, the zoo, I forget the name of the place, but it's on the outskirts of London. It's outside. And me and my wife have been there about 3 times. And some of our friends find it really funny that we are going on dates to zoos, But it was very nice to see elephants. And these are humane enclosures, or as human as zoos can be. So that's been really good.
Well, that's wonderful. I mean, when my kid was in San Francisco, it was a really nice zoo. So the first, you know, till he was about four, five maybe, I must have made about 150 trips to the zoo. We were members for a few years. Right, it was right. It was a lot of fun. The one charity I donate to, animal charity, is, I forget, it's the Snow Leopard Trust. They have like wonderful podcasts. They do fantastic work. It's got a good kind of sizable presence in India, and they work to educate, you know, communities that work in proximity. I just love snow leopards. So my son and I, we became part adopters of, I mean, you know, you get a, it's a symbolic thing. You contribute some money. They technically give you, send you a PDF. So there's a baby snow leopard who must be an adolescent by now. A couple of years ago, we technically became one of many adopters of things. It's, you know, I mean, honestly, I there's just magic in wildlife. For me, that's what it's about. I don't want to romanticize it and, you know, say all animals are cuddly and so on, not at all. But you know, this just, it's just, there's just something immensely rewarding and satisfying about it.
Look, let's wish our, take the opportunity to wish our listeners across the world a very happy new year. And, you know, happy is the wrong word, a hopeful new year. Hopefully things get better and people stay well and get through a relatively challenging time. And that's all we've got to, I've got to say in closing. Rohit, over to you before you close.
That's it. I mean, I think these circuses were, you know, for all their pathos, and, you know, we know that they had some problems, they were, you know, there was something more sort of, I think, authentic and genuine about them than the circuses we see in our governments and parliaments. So I'll just end on that note. And we'll be back next week with another episode.
Sure. Take care.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to us. Rohit and Bunty would like to sign off. Please stay tuned. Follow us on India Explained on Twitter. Keep listening. Thank you for all your support.